Gettysburg Seminary presents the Seminary Explores podcast. Conversations on faith, art, people, politics, theology, life, and more. With voices from around the corner and around the globe.
For our 45th anniversary on the Seminary Explores, we welcome Mr. Tom Rutherford back to our microphones again. He is a licensed town historian, and in his previous life, he was a portfolio manager on Wall Street, now teaching part-time in the Allentown area in a private school, so his love, obviously, is history. Our theme today, The Cost of War, Part 2, Children of the Battlefield. A number of children wrote of their memories of the battle, didn't they? Quite a remarkable number when they became adults, and some were quite articulate. Tilly Pierce was one.
That's right, Jerry. 15-year-old
Tilly Pierce,
you've got it right. Matilda, to be exact. Tilly Pierce was a 15-year-old teenager in Gettysburg at the time of the battle. The only daughter of James and Margaret Pierce, three brothers in the house in addition to herself. Background of the family, financially well off. Dad was a butcher. Church-going Methodist family. Tilly, which would have been typical for a young lady of her class and society here in Gettysburg, was attending the Young Ladies Seminary on the corner of Washington and High Street.
That sounds familiar.
So she was on a glide path to do the kinds of things young ladies would be expected to do at her age and into her early 20s.
By the way, I'm interrupting you already, and I shouldn't in one sense, but I want to mention that people in town here, and we are broadcasting before a live audience, would recognize that building even today because it is also the home of the college and the seminary. Is it not?
You're talking about the seminary itself. Yes,
yes.
It is.
Yeah.
Yes.
The Young Lady Seminary.
That's right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. Anyway, Tilly.
Well, Tilly's story goes is very much wrapped up in the battle itself, in the aftermath. Being the only daughter, you can imagine Mother Pierce observing the Union Army pell-mell running down the Baltimore Street in hasty retreat on that first day, was very concerned for the welfare of her daughter. And as chance would have it, the next-door neighbor, Henrietta Schreider, made it known to Tilly's mother that Hetty and her two very young children, daughters, were intended to leave their house and head out to her father's farm, the Weikerts, out on Tommytown Road, and asked, would Tilly like to accompany them? Of course, Mrs. Pierce was delighted with that prospect to get her out of harm's way. She didn't realize, of course, that she was really putting her daughter directly in harm's way because the Weikert farm is at the base of Little Round Top, and that would change the prospects for Tilly's safety quite a bit. Tilly made that trip with the Shriver family and did not return home until July 8th. And during that period of time, she went through a change that only a war, the circumstances of a battle like Gettysburg, could put upon a young lady whose expectations were anything but nursing people, especially men, some of whom are very close to her own age. Excuse me. Terribly wounded during that battle, completely different from what she would have expected. But then you talk about the cost of war. War always alters, rearranges societal norms and expectations of people, especially women. We talk about Tilly Pierce, but we fast forward it to perhaps our own mothers in the era of World War II, the symbols of Rosie the Riveter comes to mind. Not as dramatic, perhaps, as what Tilly went through, but obviously young women for the most part, stepping up and taking over the roles of that were outside the expectations or society's norms at the time. And that's post-suffrage period. That's a time where women were much more liberated than they were at the time of Tilly Pierce here in Gettysburg.
Yeah. When they came by the seminary, what we call the Young Women's Seminary at the time, the girls went out on the porch and serenaded the troops, did they not?
That would have been on June 30th when the...
the first set of troops came in.
When Buford's cavalrymen came into town, where they were delighted to see them as all they were, because the citizens of Gettysburg could see the Confederate campfires at night, not that far away. So, yes, Tilly and all the girls joined in to serenade the troops as they rode in on their horses.
So things have really changed by the time she begins to see these wounded come pouring over from the second day's battle. It's kind of interesting, when they sent Tilly out of town, it turned out it was the line of the path of march was actually, for them, for the kids, was actually parallel to the second day's battlefield line. I don't think they knew that. And it was just the second day's battle took place just right over the hill from the Weicker farm.
That's right. In terms of Tilly's actual trip that day, she would have fell right in with the Little Shriver girls and Hetty Shriver, fell right in with the Union troops retreating out of Gettysburg and find their way up Cemetery Hill, cutting through the Evergreen Cemetery as a kind of a shortcut over to Tawnytown Road, and then heading out the road itself to the Weichert House.
The Weichert farm is still there today.
Yes.
And the artillery park for the Union was just a few hundred feet away, a few hundred yards away maybe.
Yes.
So they were right in the middle of activity. Once the battle started on the second day, wounded start pouring into the hospital, or to the farm, which became a hospital.
That's correct.
Inevitably, because it was one of the closest farms to the rear of the Union troops.
Of the Little Round Top.
And what was Tilly's role in all that?
Tilly's Pierce started off, we suspect, probably ladling water off to the passing troops, and as the farm became more and more of a hospital, being asked or probably volunteering to do the same thing for the patients as the wounded, the number of patients grew, becoming more and more involved in the actual treatment of the medical situation at the farm. We know that they were full days from her riding, very little time to rest, a lot of time on her feet.
Mm-hmm.
She writes that not knowing at the time, but subsequently learning that she treated a number of personalities that
are
now associated with the battle. These are all Union wounded, by the way. There were no Confederates on that farm. So she had a lot to write about in the book that she did write.
We can describe the barn. It was full of people, and the house, the basement, dank as it was.
The porch
out in the open, perhaps. Yeah. Were there doctors and surgeons available?
Yes. Oh, yes. The medical staffs were available. It was a corps hospital, so the corps medical staff would have been on hand.
But they didn't have time to tend to the wounded. They could only do their amputations and triage and so on.
That was
people like Tilly had to care for them.
That's right.
As best they could.
Yeah. Post-operation, if you will, would have been would fall into to somebody like Tilly.
When she went downstairs that first night and spoke to somebody in a dark corner by candlelight,
mm-hmm.
who did she meet, and what was the situation?
Well, it turned out to be General Weed, who we associate with the successful defense of Little Round Top. He, of course, is wounded pretty severely during that. The short period of time he spends on Little Round Top, he's taken down to the Weichert farm, put on probably laid on straw or hay in the basement of the Weichert farmhouse. Tilly services his needs,
mm-hmm.
not knowing whether if he is a general or a private, not caring. And she writes that one of her last stops one night after the battle was to tend his needs, and his only request is that she come back to see him in the morning.
Next morning,
and when she
please.
Did, he had expired during the night.
Yeah.
That's when she learned he had been General Weed.
Imaginatively, if not factually, there's a tremendous conclusion to this story, and that is when she and the little girls make their way home again, and Tilly's mother's had her own adventures staying in town,
mm-hmm.
and one imagines that she thinks that Tilly's been safe all this time and has nothing to do. Can you describe that scene?
Well, both of them think the other one's fairly safe. They both discover they're pretty much both in the same situation in terms of what they've been doing in the interim between Tilly's departure from the house and her return. Just like everyone else in Gettysburg at this point in time, post-battle, we've got, you know, with 51,000 casualties, there are about 20,000 wounded who are so severely wounded they can't be moved from wherever they are. Gettysburg is a vast hospital. And not just public buildings, but every residence is taken over for the treatment of the wounded. Tilly comes home and immediately spots a red flag over the door of her own house, signifying there are wounded inside. And upon returning, discovers Mom has been taking care. Mrs. and Mrs. Pierce have been taking care of a colonel by the name of Colville from the 1st Minnesota.
Yes.
Very severely wounded. Ends up spending, I believe, over 3 months at the Pierce house before he finally leaves. By then, he's probably part of the family and promises that at some point in the future he will return, and he does.
He could have had his leg cut off, but he refused. One of the reasons why he stayed so long.
That's right.
Was crippled the rest of his life, became an attorney general or something of Minnesota.
That's correct.
And one of our state heroes. But the story is about Tilly. It strikes me, and I think this is what your point is that she starts out as a 15-year-old and ends up as a 35-year-old.
She's learned a lot in those 7 days that she's away from home.
We don't think of 15-year-olds being associated with battles, if we can help it. Maybe the Second World War in some terrible situations, but it's not a frivolous sort of a thing.
No.
She grew up.
And this is repeated many, many times throughout Gettysburg. And subsequent to the battle itself. Tilly is one of the few who does write about it, but we do have a lot of reports about it. Of course, reporting back then in the media was newspaper or magazine, reporters were all men. And men were usually would attribute Tilly's actions to maternal instincts or something like that, as opposed to being deliberate, you know, out-of-the-box reactions to a situation. She really came of age, I think.
Break here, let me say that we're talking to Tom Rutherford, who is a licensed town historian, about Children of the Battlefield, the second of our two programs on the cost of war. And by the way, we're recording on the 4th of July weekend in 2015, so it's an appropriate topic. The cost of the war, especially to the children of the battlefield in Gettysburg. I'm Jerry Christensen, and we hope you're enjoying this podcast. Let me add two real quick while you're thinking about your next story, and I know we're not going to have all that time, but the one that strikes me is the young man Hugh from the seminary,
Ziegler,
who may have been 9 or 10, and who claims later in his life that his assignment there was since the seminary building became a hospital, that he was too young to do anything else, so they had him collecting the bones of the amputees and taking them out and putting them on the pile outside the building before the pile was taken away. Mm-hmm. And his older sister, Lydia Ziegler, who writes a little more extensively, was among those who were making the soup and carrying it down, because the matron, the mother, Mary Ziegler, was kind of the caretaker for the whole hospital at the seminary.
That's correct.
And the other one you'll probably get to, maybe you want to comment on that right away before we take our last story. I'm sorry, I forced you to talk about
it. Just to follow on that on that seminary story, keep in mind that from July 1st is when the wounded first started to be taken in under the cover of the old dorm and around the old dorm area. That hospital was in existence until mid-September of 1863,
yes,
before the last patient left. Yeah. So that seminary...
It was the first and one of the last.
One of the first and one of the last, correct.
It would probably still be there, but the seminary founder, Simon Schmucker, said, we've got to move these people out. We've got to go back to school. We've got to get seminarians in here. And so by that time, they could move out to Camp Letterman.
Let me get to my next story.
All right. I'll make sure you come back to the other one if you're not going to mention it at the end of the broadcast. Go ahead.
Next story, we change genders. We get a little bit down in age. We talk about 10-year-old Charlie McCurdy, a young boy who lived with his mom and dad and two younger sisters, two doors east of Christ Lutheran Church, right on Chambersburg Street. Of course, he did a little bit of writing for a now-defunct magazine of his remembrances of it. But the story here goes not so much in the same theme as Tilly's, but is more to the post-battle recriminations, finger-pointing the one in Gettysburg after the battle subsided, the armies left. A lot of finger-pointing with respect to people accusing one another, perhaps being unduly friendly or overly sympathetic to the Confederate cause while they were here in town. Some of that got to be pretty pretty strong in intent and in language. Some people went to jail based on accusations of being overly sympathetic to Southern soldiers. The case with Charlie McCurdy is, as he recalls, several days after the battle itself, and recall now, this Gettysburg is filled with wounded. An ambulance pulls up in front of his parents' home on Chambersburg Street. The Union soldier gets off the ambulance, comes to the front door, and explains to Mr. McCurdy, Charlie's dad, that we have a wounded Confederate inside. Our intention was to take him from the seminary to the train station to put him on a train to Baltimore with the expectation that he'd be moved to Fort Monroe in Virginia as a prisoner of war. However, the train had left for the day. And where are we going to put him? And why we got to the McCurdy house in the first place to ask that question, I can come back to later. But the fact that the matter is Mr. McCurdy sold him, bring him aside. And that Confederate officer turns out to be Major General Isaac Trimble, who in the third day battle is seriously wounded in the leg, and he is made very comfortable in the McCurdy household. Big hit with the two little McCurdy girls. While he's at the house, he's paid a visit by the Secretary Seward of Lincoln's cabinet. Refuses to see him, not because he's a curmudgeon or anything. It's just he feels it's not the thing to do. But he's made to be a guest of the family, and he enjoys it much better than you can imagine the circumstances would have been at the seminary. By the way, there is a Union officer also in the McCurdy house, so it's not just that they've taken in Confederates. There is a Union officer who dies while he is at the McCurdy household. Word gets around, as it will in a town this size. Some people take it as an affront that a Confederate officer is being treated so well in the McCurdy household. And about 2 weeks later, after the ambulance pulling up to the door in the first place, another ambulance pulls up, this time with an officer who explains to General Trimble that we're going to be moving you back to the seminary. And you can imagine that the general is quite put out by this, being a general, if nothing else.
The first time anyone was ever unhappy to go to the seminary. In fact, there was a good deal of bickering in town about why this Confederate is getting better treatment than all of our Union boys, who are some of whom are still not cared for.
That's correct.
And so there might have even been a – was Seward there as a kind of investigation? He wasn't there in a friendly visit. Was it some kind of investigation by the Lincoln administration?
No, I think he wanted to just touch base with a
high-ranking
senior officer on lead staff.
Yeah.
Trimble, as background, had been an engineer in charge of building bridges and tunnels for the Baltimore and Ohio Railroad post his Academy graduation and early Army service. He was an engineer on the railroad. Therefore, he would have had a kinship with Robert McCurdy, who was president of the Gettysburg Railroad. This is Charlie's father. So perhaps it's not so circumstantial that he just happened to end up at the doorstep of the McCurdy family. Also, there appears to have been a relationship between Mrs. Trimble, Isaac General Trimble's wife, and Mrs. McCurdy. They appear to have been schoolgirls together of a finishing school nature, I'm talking about, in terms of education. So there was some kind of a relationship there. So, it was not just left to chance, I think.
Do you happen to have that quotation about Trimble, who was terribly wounded earlier in the same leg that was finally, or can you remember from memory? I can't. He was terribly wounded in the one leg that was finally removed.
I can't leave anything to memory. yes, but I do have that quote, this is a very grateful General Trimble, and this is many months after the battle. Mrs. McCurdy receives a silver soup ladle, complete surprise, and on it is, quote, "General Trimble to Mrs. McCurdy, the tribute of a grateful heart." I mean, a romantic general.
Oh, yes,
a one-legged romantic general.
All right, we can't go away. We can't conclude without a quick story about Sadie Bushman. It's one of the most touching of all. She's only 9 years old.
Eight.
8 years old. Eight. I've been saying nine.
Well, some do, but okay. I believe it was eight. But we're switching genders again, obviously. Sadie Bushman from a large family here in Gettysburg. Her only job that day is to keep an eye on her younger brother. And as the family decides that they're going to leave town for a safer area, Sadie and her younger brother are separated from the family. And you can imagine the mishmash of retreating soldiers and advancing artillery and all that going on at the same time. In fact, she puts herself in a position where she's actually fired upon in her travels to. The young lady has the presence of mind to head for her grandmother's house. Where else would you go? Mm-hmm. Right to your grandmother's house. Mm-hmm. Upon getting there, she discovers it's already been turned into a hospital. And no sooner as she gets to the farm where her grandmother resides, a surgeon sees her and asks her to please bring water over to the area in which he's working. Where he's working is a surgical area, and Sadie ends up tending to a man who actually has his leg amputated while she's there.
Mm-hmm. While she's giving him water.
While she's there. She continues to do this during the entire period that she's at her grandmother's farm. She's viewed as the littlest angel of mercy by every Union soldier that is touched by her or her actions. Post-battle, it's safe to go back home. She would do that, but every day, against her father's wishes, would go back out to that farm and tend to the wounded, only to come home and get a whipping, as she relates. That might be in the Bushman tradition, though, of running against male authority and paying the price for it. Because Sadie tells a story about her mother on that first day going up into the attic so she could watch the artillery fire coming in from the Confederates, and having her father going up and bodily putting her over his shoulder to take her downstairs and tell her if she does it again, she'll be spanked. So there may be a tradition.
This is the 19th century, yeah. In all cases, the children are put under circumstances that we'd hate to ever put any of our children in the situation of war, and these three fortunately came out well and grew from it. A terrible, terrible price to pay. I'm Jerry Christensen. You've been listening to the Seminary Explorers. Our guest is Tom Rutherford, a licensed town historian. Our topic for this 4th of July weekend in the year 2015 has been the costs of war, especially for children. For the Seminary Explorers, have a very good day.
You have been listening to the Seminary Explorers from historic Seminary Ridge in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania. A production of Gettysburg Seminary. We invite you to visit our website at www.ltsg.edu. Opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of Gettysburg Seminary or the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America.